I love the Lord and I won't take it back. Okay, let's get started, please. All right, first let's do a little bit of review. What is the theme of Daniel?
Daniel.
No, what is the theme of Daniel?
God's in control.
That's one of the messages of Daniel. One of the messages is God is in control. But again, according to my outline anyway, what's the theme of Daniel? Oh, yes, God rules the nations. And then we have two principal messages. One is how we as disciples of Jesus can remain righteous and hold on to our Christian convictions no matter what the world is trying to do to us. And God is in control. Now there are two parts of Daniel. The two parts of Daniel are what we're going to do. We started last week. We're going to nearly finish this week, which is the stories about Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we see them in circumstances that are quite intense, probably more intense than what we normally have to deal with. Has anybody ever been threatened to be thrown in a fiery furnace? No. Hasn't happened to me yet. All right. Excuse me. And the second half of our class will be the visions of the future and the interpretation of those visions. Okay, great. Now, we already did Daniel chapter 1. And what circumstance were we being encouraged or exhorted to be faithful in? Daniel chapter 1. No, at work. Sure, surrounded by unrighteousness. That's a little bit vague. That's all the time. Every time you're not here. Right, so on the job. And the question is, will you compromise your convictions on the job? And all of us, at some point in our life, are going to be in a situation, maybe not the same, but something similar. And the question is, how are you going to do? You know, Peter was in a situation, he didn't do too well one time, right? Why didn't he do so well? I think it's because he didn't think about it ahead of time. If he'd thought about it, when he went to that courtyard and the girl came up to him, I'm sure he would have done the right thing. He just, yeah, well, okay, but thoughtless preparation is something to think about. Okay, great. Now, who's the audience of Daniel? The principal audience.
The Jews
in what situation? Persecution. Under this Greek ruler, if you don't know his name yet, that's totally forgivable. His name is Antiochus Epiphanes. Great. And that's the audience. What book in the New Testament is fairly similar to Daniel?
Revelation.
See, we learned a few things. That's great. So we went through, we learned about the four empires, Babylon, Persia, Mede, Greek, Roman. And we went through Daniel 1. Now we're in the middle of Daniel chapter 3 when time ran out. So here's the situation. The situation is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are being commanded to bow down to this idol. And we decided that probably their salvation is not at stake, but certainly the opportunity to glorify God is at stake, that's for sure. So anyway, they do the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all those things. And tens of thousands of people bow down. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stand for God. That's awesome stuff. But I think that's where we ended. So let's pick it up from there. Now, remember the scene was the stage, Nebuchadnezzar, the fiery furnace, and tens of thousands of people. And you can guess, you probably know the story, but you can guess that Nebuchadnezzar was not particularly pleased with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's convictions. In fact, he was really mad. Verse 13, furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you're ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you'll be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue from my hand? Basically says, guys, one more chance. One more chance. He says, think about it. What God can save you? His God had already defeated the Jewish God, right? Baal had already defeated Yahweh. From the human perspective, he conquered their city, and the treasures from the temple of Israel were sitting in his storehouse. He's like, guys, let's face the facts. The fact is, it's not looking good for you guys. All right? And again, what would you have done? Well, I love what they did. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. This is awesome. Here is the most powerful man in the world, whose God, at least in principle, defeated their God. And he says, bow. And they say, we're not going to bow down. He says, God can rescue us. But even if he doesn't, it doesn't matter. Remember I said, believing that God is in control, when's it easy? When everything's going great. How about when things are going terrible? Well, yeah. Again, God could rescue you from the thing you're asking him to rescue you from. But maybe he won't. The question is not whether God will rescue. The question is whether you believe God is in control and whether you're going to submit to him anyway. I tell you this, that whatever God has in mind for you is better than what you have in mind for you. All right? But that might involve you dying even. You don't know. You could end up on the unemployment lines. And then you share with another unemployed person, they go to heaven. Hello? I mean, seriously, which would be better? Having the job during that time or somebody going to heaven? You don't know. So, again. So they said, you know, God can save us, but even if he does it, it's not going to change anything. You got that? Do you get that? God could rescue you from that situation. God could give you that job. He could give you that spouse. He could help your kids to become a Christian, whatever it is. But even if he doesn't, even if he doesn't. Did they expect to be saved from the flames? I don't think they did. I don't know of any precedent. I don't have any evidence that God told them they would be. But what they said is, God can rescue us from your hand. In other words, they'll be in heaven one way or another, right? What can man do for me? Hebrews 13, what can man do for me? All right, but I love what happened. It's sort of cool, you know? So let's read on. Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious. I mean, he was already furious. Now he's just even more furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Who are these twerps? These teenagers? Who do they think they are? All the other big wigs and important people, they bowed down. Anyway, he ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual. Commanded some of the strongest soldiers in the army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, all right, their robes, their trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent, the furnace so hot, that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, weren't these 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire? Weren't there 3 men? They replied, yes, you're very smart. When the king says, isn't this what happened? The smart thing to say, yes, exactly what you say, king. Exactly what you said. Yep, yep, you say so. He said, look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods. Who was that? I don't know. It's pretty awesome. I'll tell you right now, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were fired up. That's one of those lines, you know, it's one of those, yeah, you know, They're fired up. All right, good. Again, though, the message of this story, I believe, is the same, whether they were rescued from the flames or not. I don't think it changes the message. However, if you think about the Jews suffering extreme persecution under Antiochus Epiphanes, I believe this was a great encouragement. And I believe for the Christians in the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd century, being thrown into prison, their leaders being killed, losing their job, being forced out of the employment system, I believe that they could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and be greatly encouraged. All right, so anyway, I won't bother to read the rest of the story. Bottom line is, Nebuchadnezzar says, Jehovah is great, and all that sort of stuff. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, he kind of had these conversion experiences a few times, and we need to be maybe a little bit skeptical. I mean, we haven't read it yet, but in chapter 2, Daniel interprets the dream, and Nebuchadnezzar, God is great, God is great. And, you know, a few months later, God's not so good, and, I'm sort of awesome myself. But again, Nebuchadnezzar has another religious experience here. He's like, God is good, and, God is awesome. Well, a lot of times people go through stuff in their life. They have a religious experience. They show up, but they're like the seed on the rocky soil. You know what I'm saying? They're really enthusiastic, and then a month later, they won't even talk to you. We got to be aware that that's going to happen in life. I mean, there's going to be people who seem so open and so, I'm not saying that you should live in paranoia about that. Just be aware it's going to happen. Anyway, now we're in Daniel chapter 4. All right. The theme of Daniel chapter 4 is this. Those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. All right. So anyway, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. This is the second dream. An interesting thing about Daniel chapter 4 is in this chapter, it's Nebuchadnezzar that's speaking. This is a letter he's writing. And what he's saying to people is, you need to worship Jehovah. It's kind of cool. So anyway, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. Let me read about that dream. I'll skip down here. He's talking about, this is what happened to me, and it's really interesting, and I want all my people to listen to this story. Verse 9, I said, basically what he does is he calls his magicians and sorcerers and say, hey, interpret the dream. And because of chapter 2 that we haven't studied yet, they found out that if you give a sort of a fake interpretation, capital punishment. So instead of saying some fake interpretation, they say, we don't know. Good decision. But, of course, Nebuchadnezzar knows that Daniel is inspired by Jehovah and he can interpret dreams. So he calls in Daniel and he asks him to interpret the dream. Now, the problem is, generally, if you're going to give a king bad news, what do they say? Don't kill the messenger? All right, so Nebuchadnezzar is going to be delivering some bad news to Nebuchadnezzar, so he's understandably a little bit nervous. So here we go. I said, Belshazzar, chief of the magicians, I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you. Kind of buttering him up a little bit. All right, and no mystery is too difficult for you. Here is my dream. Interpret it for me. All right, these are the visions I had. So again, this is Nebuchadnezzar talking to Belshazzar. And who's Belshazzar? Daniel, right. These are the visions I saw while lying in my bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. Its height was enormous. Now, just for fun, see if you can interpret this dream while we're reading it. Just for fun. So it's going to be this big tree. Who or what is this tree? Anyway, the tree grew large and strong. Its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful. Its fruit abundant. And on it was food for all. Under it, the wild animals found shelter. The birds lived in its branches. From it, every creature was fed. In the vision I saw while lying in bed, I looked, and there before me was a holy one, a messenger, coming down from heaven. He called out in a loud voice, cut down the tree, trim off its branches, strip off its leaves, scatter its fruit. Let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches, but let the stump and its roots bound with iron and bronze remain in the ground in the grass of the field. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him, the tree, Let him live with the animals among the plants of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal till seven times pass by for him. So who is this tree? It's Nebuchadnezzar. And that's what Daniel's going to tell him. All right, so let's skip down to the interpretation. All right, let's see here. Then Daniel, also known as Belteshazzar, verse 19, was greatly perplexed for a time, and his thoughts terrified him. So the king said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its meaning alarm you. Belteshazzar answered, my lord, if only the dream applied to your enemies and meaning to your adversaries. The tree you saw, which grew large and strong with its top touching the sky, visible in the whole earth, with beautiful leaves and abundant fruit, providing food for all, giving shelter to the wild animals and having a meeting place in its branches, nesting place for the birds. Your majesty, you are that tree. You become great and strong. Your greatness has grown until it reaches the sky. Your dominion extends to the distant parts of the earth. Your majesty saw a holy one, a messenger, coming down from heaven and say, cut down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump bound with iron and bronze. The grass of the field, while its roots remain in the ground, let him be drenched with the dew of heaven. Let him live with the wild animals until seven times pass by for him. This is the interpretation, your majesty. This is the decree the Most High has issued against my lord the king. You'll be driven away from the people. You will live with the wild animals. You'll eat grass like the ox and be drenched with the dew of heavens. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms of the earth and gives them to anyone he pleases. The command to leave the stump and the tree with its roots means that the kingdom will be restored to you when you acknowledge that heaven rules. All right, so what happens here is Nebuchadnezzar goes, oh my goodness, I'm going to repent. And decides basically that he's going to humble himself before God. Oh, please, Lord Jehovah, please, let this terrible thing happen, not happen. And, it's like the person who's drunk and they say, God, if you'll rescue me from this and my parents don't find out, I'll be a Christian till the day I die, that kind of thing. Or maybe even some things we've sometimes done, you know what I'm saying? He's got this great conviction, but what happens over time? People tell him how awesome he is and how amazing he is. Bottom line is, he goes right back to where he was. Verse 28. All this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar. 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, is this not this great Babylon that I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? I am so awesome. Me, my, I, me, me, I, me, my. All right. Now, of course, we would never, ever do what Nebuchadnezzar did. Oh, the ICOC is so amazing. We're God's kingdom on earth, and we're his movement. Have we ever said something like that? Yeah. Oh, my Bible talk, it's fruitful. It's an awesome Bible talk. Yeah, I sure am glad my kids are Christians. I did a pretty good job. Sure am glad I'm part of my church. Those churches over there, oh man, those people, those ignorant people. Wow, I don't know. I think we could be like this. Even as the words were on his lips. By the way, who had given him his kingdom? God. How do we know that? Well, in Isaiah 39, it was a prophecy made 150 years before that God was going to raise up the king of Babylon. All right, and besides, he said, oh, I built this city. How many bricks do you think he actually laid? Like zero. Who built the actual city? What an arrogant person. But seriously, how might you and I be? Of course, this guy's blatant, right? He's blatant. But how might you and I be taking credit for what God has done, or even what other people have done? I like 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7. Actually, part of me doesn't like it, to be honest with you. But there's lots of verses I don't like sometimes. You know what I'm saying? OK. Okay, I try not to keep scissors in my hand when I'm reading the Bible. All right, just kidding. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7. For who made you different from anyone else? What do you have that you did not receive? And here's the point. And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not? Every single thing that I have that's good came from God. My life came from God. My wife came from God. My children came from God. My church, my salvation, the gifts that I have. By the way, there are a few things that I have that did not come from God. My pride, my selfishness, my greed. All right, and so what? You know what I think? Probably we should pay careful attention to Daniel chapter 4, because what the Bible says is, those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. All right, and that's exactly what it did to our friend Neb. So let's go back to Daniel chapter 4. Neb, you know, I call him Neb. He's a friend of mine. Known him for years. Okay, great. All right, all this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar, as you know. 12 months later, he's on his palace. He's saying, I am awesome. God is lucky to have me. Man, I'm telling you, if only people could learn from me, then they would figure out how to do things around here. Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken away from you. You'll be driven away from the people and will live with the wild animals. You're going to join the munch for lunch bunch. You will eat grass like the ox. 7 times will pass for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he pleases. Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from the people, ate grass like the ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven till his hair grew like the feathers of the eagle and his nails like the claws of a bird. By the way, there's some historical evidence that this is exactly what happened. Probably what happened is Nebuchadnezzar's advisors, because there was this huge garden. I mean, he built this the most famous garden in the ancient world. One of the 7 wonders of the ancient world is the Babylon Gardens. Probably they just put him in there. He's kind of crazy, just insane. And he's crawling around eating grass and all that sort of stuff. And what the reason they would do that is because then they could pretend that he's still not crazy and probably bring him in every once in a while, set him up there. By the way, the English did this. King George III, he was insane for something like 25 years. And every once in a while, they kind of put him up on the throne there for public display, didn't let him talk. And that way, his ministers could kind of hold power. And, you know, I don't know what they did. But anyway, now, another thing to notice, 7 times, whether it's 7 weeks, 7 months, or 7 years, certainly not 7 weeks, because his hair, let's just say it was 7 years. Hello? 7 years? Do you think he could have repented a little bit earlier? This guy has got a lot of pride issues going on. All right. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven, verse 34. My sanity was restored, and I praised the Most High, I honor him, and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven, with the people of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, what have you done? At the same time that my sanity was restored, my honor and splendor returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors and nobles sought me out. I was restored to my throne and became even greater than before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven. That's Jehovah. Because everything he does is right and all his ways are just, and those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. Now, I believe there are 2 ways that God can humble you. One way God can humble you is by blessing you tremendously. And you say, praise God. I don't deserve any of it. I'm so thankful. And guess what the other way he can humble you is? Taking it all away. All right, so which one are you going to go for? By the way, he says those who walk in pride is able to humble. I would say for those in the kingdom, those who walk in pride, he will humble. All right, so you get to choose. Are you going to give glory to God? Are you going to say, is not this awesome, mighty spiritual life that I've built? Because I really am an awesome disciple, and I hope everybody knows that. If they don't, they should. All right, Daniel chapter 5. Party animal. meets man of God. Now, this is a number of years later. In fact, we know the year. The year is 538 BC. This is 67 years after Daniel went into captivity. He's about 82 years old. Now, what happened is Nebuchadnezzar died, and the evidence is, I don't think that Nebuchadnezzar became a full-blown monotheist, but the evidence is he kind of put Jehovah as the chief in his pantheon of gods, and Bel and all those, Marduk, those are always out there as well. All right, so, and in fact, we're going to see in one of the visions, we'll see that God's acknowledging that. He died, his son took office, evil Merodach. Having the name Evil, that's kind of a weird name, but the evil didn't mean evil back then. Anyway, that was supposed to be funny. And anyway, he dies. All right, and Nabopolassar takes over. Nabopolassar had a palace coup, and so he was not the legitimate heir. He was just a general who took over. And then what he did was he married the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. See what he's trying to do there? Right, trying to get legitimacy. So anyway, the interesting thing is Nabopolassar and evil Merodach are not mentioned in Daniel. This is 67 years after the opening. All right, how's Daniel doing? I'll tell you what he's doing. He's still doing great. Now, at this point, under Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel was an honored figure, a very important government figure. But under the succeeding kings, he's just shoved to the side. They're not paying him attention. They've pretty much completely forgotten him. But Daniel is not, having a pity party there, presumably. All right, great. King Belshazzar. By the way, Belshazzar and Belteshazzar, that could be a little bit confusing. Belteshazzar, that's Daniel. Belshazzar is this king, the son of Nabopolassar. All right, you got that memorized? Nabopolassar. It's on the quiz for next week. Just kidding. All right, anyway. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, actually his grandfather, just so you know, all right, had taken. Now, let's stop right here. Now, one of the things that the critics have said, because, again, like I told you, most skeptics, and even, believe it or not, a lot of theologians who probably should resign their positions, but nevertheless, believe that Daniel was written after, like, 160 B.C. And one of the reasons is because Daniel mentions this guy, Belshazzar. None of the historical records mention Belshazzar at all. All the historical records, other than Daniel, say Nabopolassar was the last king of Babylon. Herodotus mentions that. Others do. So the critics said, there is no Belshazzar. This guy Daniel, who lived 300 years later anyway, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's making it up. Well, let's finish the story, and we'll find out that's actually not that's not the case. So anyway, so he says, hey, let's get drunk using the vessels from God's temple. Bad idea. Really, really bad idea. All right. From the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, multiple wives, and concubines might drink from them. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines drank from them, and as they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver and bronze and iron and wood and stone. You know, God tolerates a lot. I mean, it's ridiculous sometimes how much God tolerates. You know what I'm saying? God is a merciful God, slow to anger and quick to forgive. That's why Jonah was not too happy at God and all that kind of stuff. But there is a limit, right? Christian or not, there's a limit to what God will put up with. Suddenly, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale. He was so frightened that his legs became weak, his knees were knocking, and he peed his pants. It doesn't say that, but I'm pretty sure he did. I'm pretty sure he did. The king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. Then he said to these wise men, really wise guys, Whoever reads the writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck. He will be made the third highest in the kingdom. All right, let's stop right there. Why the third highest? Why not the second highest? No, here's the deal. In the 1960s or the 70s, I'm not sure, in the Ziggurat in Ur. Ur is the city that Abraham grew up in. It was still a major city in southern Babylon at the time. They found an inscription and explained what happened. What happened is Nabopolassar married the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar in order to legitimize not himself, but his son. And he had a son, and guess what his name was, according to the inscription? Belshazzar. And Nabopolassar made his son be the regent king. In fact, by the time this is written, Belshazzar has been a regent for 17 years. And he ruled effectively as king because Nabopolassar wasn't that interested in ruling the empire. He spent most of his time in Sin. Literally in Sin. It's a city in the Arabia called Sin. Another interesting, you know, evil Merodach and Sin and all that kind of stuff. And so what happened is that Belshazzar ruled as king. Now, what's not mentioned here is the very night this incident happens, King Cyrus has surrounded the city of Babylon with his armies. And it turns out the walls were massive, right? And what he did was he dammed the city. Is it the Tigris or the Euphrates? I think it's the Tigris. And so basically the river which ran underneath the city was dry, and his soldiers marched. In fact, while this is happening, it's a large city, it's possible that already the soldiers had entered the city. But anyway, so why did Belshazzar offer the third place in the kingdom? Because he occupied the second place in the kingdom. So not only are the critics wrong, but Daniel is right. In fact, Daniel is the only person until this inscription was found that even mentions Belshazzar. So the accuracy of the Bible is always supported by every single historical, archaeological discovery ever made. When will these people finally give up and admit the Bible is by far the most accurate and reliable historical record from the ancient world? They say, well, this wasn't really true when we find that. Well, that wasn't really true when we find that. Well, this wasn't. At some point, they should say, so far, everything that it's been said that's been checked by anything has proved true. Probably, the honest truth is, it's the most reliable ancient history book in the world. But anyway, that's not the point. That's just a little side note. So, getting back to that. So they can't figure it out. Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified, and his face grew even more pale. The nobles were baffled. The queen, by the way, actually it's the queen mother. So this is the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar, quite old. All right. So she remembers Daniel. She was probably there even when Daniel did some of the things that he'd done. The queen, hearing the voices of the king and his nobles, came into the banquet hall. May the king live forever, she said. Don't be alarmed. Don't look for so pale. There's a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your father, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. Your father, King Nebuchadnezzar, appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, astrologers. Daniel, whom the king called Belteshazzar, was found to have a keen mind and knowledge and understanding, and also the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve difficult problems. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means. Anyway, so Daniel was brought before the king, and the king said to him, "Are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father the king brought from Judah? I've heard the spirit of the gods is in you and that you have insight." And, you know, what happens is our totally worldly people who would just blow you off and laugh at you and treat you with total disdain when their life is falling apart. That's what happens. You know, it's going to happen. Somebody at work, someday, they're getting a divorce. You know, that's what happened to David, right, with Fernando. All right. You know, all of a sudden, they realize there's one person here who has lived righteously, has set an example. I'm going to go talk to that person. And so that's what happens. All right. Where was it? Now I have heard that you're able to give interpretations to solve different problems. If you can read the writing and tell me what it means, you'll be clothed in purple, have a gold chain placed around your neck, and you will be made the third highest in the ruler in the kingdom. Then it's like, awesome! No. Purple robe, third in the kingdom, yeah! No? Then Daniel answered the king, you may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Now, what happened this very night, by the way? This very night, Babylon was conquered. And being the third person in the kingdom, not a really good idea. Bad idea. Not really a good thing. All right. Your Majesty, the Most High God gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. Because of the high position he gave him, all the nations and people of every language dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to put it to death, he did, etc., etc., etc. Great. Verse 22. But you terrible, wicked king Belshazzar, his son, actually his grandson, by the way, have not humbled yourself before you, though you knew all this. Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You have had the goblets from his temple brought to you. And you and your nobles, your wives, and your concubines drink wine for them. You are a wretch, and you need to repent. You are a very, very evil person. Therefore he sent the hand that is written in the inscription. This is what the inscription says. Mene, mene, tekel, parson. All right, so it was apparently in the Persian language, because that's what mene, mene, tekel, parson is. Okay, and the word mene means measured. Tekel, okay, let's just read on. Mene, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you've been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Peres, or parson, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. So here's the message. God has measured you. He's weighed you. You are toast. Your kingdom is divided. All right? And that's exactly what happened that very night. That very night. Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple. A gold chain was placed around his neck. I'm sure he removed those soon afterward. And he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. A little bit note about Darius. This has caused a little bit of confusion because it turns out that there was a King Darius, and the King Darius was the third king, the third king after Cyrus. All right, and so there was Cyrus, and then his son Cambyses, who conquered Egypt. Then he had a son Darius, but that's not who this person is. This person is 62 years old. Now, the critics have said there is no Darius the Mede. All right, that's what they say, but they also said there's no Belshazzar. And they were wrong on that, and I'll tell you right now, they're wrong on this one. But there are some questions about who this guy was. But remember, the way it worked is, this was an unusual empire in that they officially had two kings. And before Cyrus, the Medes were the major power, and the Persians were the minor power. But after Cyrus, the Persians were the major power, and the Medes were the minor power. So probably, it turns out, after the conquering of Babylon, Babylon was the largest province in Persia. And so probably what happens is Cyrus the king put Darius the Mede, he's Median, not Persian, in charge of the largest province. The fact that we don't have a record, although it's probably a guy named Astyages, but that's detailed, you don't care about all that stuff, so I'll stop on that. Bottom line is, that's what happened. So now Daniel is close to 80, maybe 83, 84, and now Cyrus takes over. The cool thing is, Cyrus, and there's the Mede, raised Daniel up back to the position he had before. Now, it's a little bit early. Let me introduce Daniel chapter 6. Okay. Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel, 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 Daniel in the lion's den. This is a great story. Let's just read the first heart. All right? Now, Daniel was a very righteous man. It pleased Darius. This is Darius the Mede, not the emperor of the Persian Empire, but the king of the province of Babylon within the Persian Empire. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout his kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. But they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him. Listen to this. Because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." Now, how awesome is that? Can you honestly say, in all of your dealings at work, no corruption or even negligence? No corruption or even negligence. I'm sorry. I mean, I think I'm in the top few percent, but I'm sorry. That's not me. You know, a couple times I made copies. I was in a hurry. You know, probably, you know, it would have been okay, but I didn't ask. Now everybody does it. But right, that's the whole point. That's the whole point, is to be different from what everybody does. This guy was so righteous. See, this guy Darius was a smart leader. He said, "I have an actual government administrator who's not corrupt." When did that ever happen? Now, why is everybody so angry at Daniel being made the head honcho? Because jealous, okay, I think it's because they're corrupt. And they realize if Daniel's in charge, we're not going to be able to take any more bribes. All right? And, you know, I believe this can happen. This is real life, folks. Hi, long time no see. Anyway. Yeah, hi. Great. So, the bottom line is, if you are like this, your fellow workers may not appreciate it. We had a friend, Frank, and he was in the factory, and when he said, "When I go to work, I work 8 hours." But he's in a union where nobody worked 8 hours. And it's kind of an agreement. Nobody works too hard, but if anybody works really hard, what's it make everybody look like? Makes them look bad. You know what? If you make them look bad, that's a good thing. Are they going to like it? Probably not. But I'm telling you, there are good hearts there. There are good hearts there. They're in on it, but they feel guilty about it. All right? And I'm telling you, 1%, 5%, 10%, I don't know. But if we'll be like Daniel, look at this. Read this one more time. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and never corrupt nor negligent. Well, on that challenging thought, let's have some announcements. Daniel. I'll give the first announcement, which is the Acts class starts Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. Either here or there, I don't know. And if you haven't come, it's going to be great. The muffins are really good. And the $20 would just cover the muffins and the coffee for 6 weeks. And by the way, you say, "Well, I can't come to all of them." Well, then come to as many of them as you can. All right? It'll be very encouraging. So here we go, Daniel.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Thank you always for your excitement and teaching from the book of Daniel. Really appreciate it. There's so many good things from each chapter.